You're listening to the Reading Envy podcast, where I'll have what you're reading. Hi, everyone. This is Jenny. And today I'm in the Reading Envy pub with a new guest. It's Jessica Anderson. Welcome, Jessica.
Thanks for having me, Jenny.
Now, you're also in Litzy as
The Blue Stocking.
And I'll link to all the places that people can find you. So this isn't quite a typical episode. We're going to talk about the Tournament of Books list because both of us have been fans for years of the Tournament of Books, and we both read different parts of the list. And so we'll get into that a little bit later. But that's why this episode's on an off week. So you're welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you?
Who am I? I love this question. I live near Salt Lake City, Utah, and I'm a lawyer by profession. I work part-time doing that, mostly litigation. And then when I'm not doing that, I love to read, and that's my principal hobby. I do post quite a bit on Litzy, and let's see, I have a daughter and a husband and a dog.
What kind of books do you like to read? What kind of reader are you?
I like to think I will read most anything, but I tend toward literary fiction and nonfiction, kind of popular nonfiction. That's very
interesting. Well, what is the last good nonfiction book you read?
Oh, you're testing
Sorry
me.
To put you on the crutch.
No, I actually just finished a bunch of small, I'm in a bit of a reading funk at the moment, so I've been listening to short nonfiction audiobooks. So I just read Save Me the Plums by Ruth Reichel, which I really loved.
I made the cake from that book.
I saw your post actually when I posted on Goodreads. Was it delicious?
It was okay. I didn't think it was great, honestly.
But it sounded very British, and they don't like sugar.
Yeah, it was more of like a casual cake. It sounds silly, but it was so important in the book, right?
Yeah, it was.
That's why I wanted to try it.
I really liked it. And I've been trying to find other audiobooks by her because I thought her reading it was really fun. But they haven't done any others, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah. All her other memoirs aren't in audio, or she didn't read them.
Yeah. What's her most famous one?
Garlic and Sapphire? Is that something like that?
That is one of them. But anyway, Audible has an abridged one, which is very, but not a full one, which confuses me. I do not understand abridged audiobooks.
I don't either.
That's probably an aside. It drives me crazy. Yeah.
So your way out of reading funk is short nonfiction. That's interesting.
Right now, anyway.
Well, an episode that we'll have just posted, but you haven't heard yet, we talk about reading funks. And for me, I have to like blow open genre a little bit, really read something unusual for me. And sometimes that helps. But
that's a good idea. Yeah. Sometimes I like to venture into something romancy or fluffy too, just to cleanse my palate a bit.
Yeah. And especially if you're listening, it can be a completely different experience.
Yes. So,
well, it's good that you like literary fiction because the Tournament of Books is very specifically contemporary, current literary fiction, I would say. It tends to include books that are short stories and novels.
Although this year, not a single short story in sight.
Not on the short list.
Yes, yeah. They had a ton on the long list.
I read some of those because I wanted to talk about them. And I'm not usually a short story person, but for some reason this year, I think it's because I'm reading all these dense, heavy books. I'm reading Faulkner. I'm reading The Odyssey. And so I'm like looking for the short books.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Another kind of palate cleanser, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Although sometimes short books can be a little bit misleading. They can be pretty dense. And not so short to read.
It's true. Because they are baby novels, basically, some of them.
Yeah.
That you have to put a lot into.
And it's almost like poetry where every word matters. And so it can take more time. Yeah, it's a weird kind of conundrum. And so, like, we don't own the Tournament of Books. And I want to say deepest apologies if we should have asked for permission, which we did not do. But we're super fans and we're hoping that people hear about this and either jump on and participate to limited amounts this year if you just heard about it, or just mark it down for next year. The list of the long list usually comes out, what, November? December?
Yes, I think it's like the end of November usually.
Yeah, and people are waiting for it when it comes.
I am. I'm always checking.
And then this year, the shortlist was announced, I believe, in January.
It was actually right before Christmas, because I remember I was jazzed I could add some last minute things to my Christmas list.
Oh, that was early.
Yes, it was. Early. It was early.
And it's modeled very much after like March Madness basketball tournament. So in the end, there are 16 books and they compete against each other. And except for, it's not for scores. So there's a guest judge for every round and they make the call. I don't think basketball March Madness has zombie picks though, right? I don't
actually watch baseball. It would be kind of awesome if they did. They do not.
Okay.
They don't.
So the zombie picks, they come back around. It's books that had been kicked out, but they come back around. But they have to come from the original shortlist.
Right. Right? And they do like a popular vote right after the shortlist comes out, which is rough because I don't always know which one to give my vote to.
Right, because it's like you could give it to your favorite, but that book might be everyone else's favorite, and then it's not going to get kicked out.
Right.
I don't even remember what I voted for this year.
I think I did Lost Children Archive, because that was the one I'd read and loved the most.
Yeah.
Before.
That might be mine, too. It's just like playing a game. You never know.
It's true. I never even put that much stock into it, but I was wondering if you remembered how you found out about the tournament.
I'm sure somewhere online. I mean, I follow so many bookish people and I don't remember exactly when though. I remember feeling like I should have known about it already.
I have very similar. I can't remember where. It must have been just the book blogosphere at the time because it was 2012. I found out about it right at the end, like a couple days before the final match. And I was just like, what is this magic?
I'm going to take a little pause and look really quick and see how long ago. So I can check.
Do you remember what won? A Visit from the Goon Squad?
It's definitely after that year.
The Sisters Brothers was the year that I found out about it.
Then that
it
might be the year I knew about it but didn't participate.
And then the next year it was The Orphan Master's Son.
I did read that book. Was it for that reason? I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm going to look here and see what like the oldest books on that shelf in Goodreads are. I remember the first year I was super invested in it was the year that White Tears was in the mix, but that wasn't the first year I knew about it.
Oh, White Tears was just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, like I think it's 2016? Only been 3 or 4 years for me.
2018 was White Tears.
Well, okay, I think it was the year, okay, Orphan Master's Son, Bring Up the Bodies, Arcadia, May We Be Forgiven. Are those all from the same?
Let me go back to Orphan Master's Son is 2013. Yep, Arcadia, Bring Up the Bodies. Yes, that's 2013.
Okay. That must have been my first year. Well, since longer than I thought. That's 7 years.
Wow. It goes fast.
And I don't think I've done a great job at always adding that to the shelf because I only have 4 pages here. But there's definitely books and authors that I've been introduced to because of this. A lot of books, actually.
Me too.
Because they do this good job of like, there's some that like everyone's heard of, and then there's books I've never heard of. And sometimes those end up being my favorites. Like May We Be Forgiven by A.M. Holmes. I love that book.
That was a good one.
It has the hilarious hamster, right?
That's right. I had almost forgot about that. Even A.M. Holmes is... I didn't know about her, but she's been publishing for a while. But then they just sometimes come with this stuff out of left field. I'm just like, where did you guys? I guess they have a practice of going through and talking to like random booksellers and different people to try and get suggestions, which is nice.
Yeah, especially the long list. There seems to be a nice mix of debut novels, which you don't always hear as much about. And
right.
Yeah, I think that might be how I heard about Scott McClanahan. Possibly, but it was a fun read.
Is that Hill William?
And then I went back and read Crapalacia and the Sarah book and everything. Everything he writes, I read.
Oh, interesting. I've only read the Hill William. I thought it was one of those that I'm like, this is just random enough to work.
Oh, you know, I'm looking at the list. The other book that I read, I would never have heard. I probably never would have. Like I'd heard of it, but I wouldn't have pushed myself into reading it, is Stephen Florida.
I didn't read that one and it's one I'm sad. It was a play-in.
Yeah. It is amazing. I'm totally not interested in the content, the subject, wrestling, whatever. Ugh. But right? It's so good. I'm teaching a reading class in May, and I'm making my students go through a book club experience. And that's one of the books I'm picking.
Oh, I would love to be in that class.
Yeah. I'm excited. Well, okay. So we're huge fans anyway of the Tournament of Books, and we will continue following it, I'm sure, as many years as it goes. So I'll link to all the official posts by it too. But one of the things that we'll be looking at that we'll just have to link to, because I don't know if it is on their website yet, but there's an official bracket. And so that means that some of our books are going to be pitted against each other. So we might
talk about that. It's a little stressful. Yes.
It's very stressful. I remember last year, my two favorites were against each other, and I just knew it was never going to work out.
It's sad.
Well, okay. So were there books that you expected to see even on the long list that didn't show up there?
You know, I was trying to think about that and I couldn't find any specific examples. I know I'm always a little, you know, when you get the long list and you start scrolling through it and you're looking for your favorites and you can't find it. One I was a little surprised wasn't there was City of Girls by an author I just blanked on.
Elizabeth Gilbert. Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha.
Not because I loved it so very much, though I did enjoy it, but because it was just a popular literary fiction last year. What
and about she's you? Been on the list before.
No. Yes, so. With The Signature of All Things, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, what about you?
Well, I had two. The number one that I was not the only person surprised it wasn't on the list is Cantoris by Carolina de Robertis. And of course, I've talked about that book of my favorites of the year, but I really thought it was like obvious choice. So that was surprising. One that is just an amazing book, but I feel like it might have slipped through the wrong publishing time of year is The Museum of Modern Love by Heather Rose. I don't know, it might have been just a little too old, but it would have been perfect in the tournament.
I've heard nothing but good things about it. I like that the tournament runners acknowledge that the whole thing is pretty random.
Yeah.
That they cannot create the best list of all the books because there's no way one person can read that much. And so it's just, they're just trying to take a stab, trying to get people to read different things, and they might miss some great stuff. They have a reader judge every year, right? So you can apply to be it. And I did it once, but then I was like, this would be way too nerve-wracking.
Right. Like, what if you got books you hated or
just liked one that wasn't popular and people got mad at you or people disagreed with your basis for choosing it?
I think that's what makes this really interesting is it becomes almost personal to people.
I guess in a manner, like sports teams, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to be very upset if, for example, Lost Children Archive does not get past the first round.
I know, but you know, there's some pushback on that book.
I know. I don't understand. I mean, I do, but I loved it so much.
I did too. It was like my perfect book. It was like if you had sat down and said, I'm going to write a book for Jenny this year, and it has to have five things that she loves. And here it is.
Aww. Just a book. Well, and it is pitted. We may be jumping ahead of ourselves on the bracket. It's okay. Pitted against one of my other favorites. So we'll get there.
That's our teaser. We'll get there. Okay. So there's a few books that we thought would be on there, but there's still a lot of great books on the long list. And for me, for every award, it's always about the long list for me. Like, by the time I get to the short list of almost any award, I'm kind of like, yeah, well, I'm going to go look at these other books that you almost picked because for some reason, those are usually the books I like the best.
That's an interesting technique because I always feel overwhelmed by the long list. Like I don't even know where to start. And so I almost always wait for the short list to start reading.
And it's a super long, long list. Like this year, yes. It was only like 62 books. I think in the past, it's been up to like 77, 92. Yeah. Oof.
Yeah, it just makes me a little crazy.
Well, were there any that you read that were on the long but not short list, just for other reasons?
Just two. So I ended up reading seven books that were on the long list before the short list was announced, and only two were not selected for the short list. So that's
pretty good luck.
That
maybe
is
you're
going to
pick the winner
luck.
This year.
I don't know. I don't think so. My batting average in the past has not been high, so... But the two books were The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead and Red at the Bone by Jacqueline Woodson.
Both of them were left off the shortlist.
Yeah, you know, Colson Whitehead actually won with Underground Railroad 2 years ago.
Yeah, I didn't agree with that one either.
Yeah. So I was a little surprised that that didn't even make the short list. And then we talked about this a little before recording, but I read At the Bone. I really liked at the time, but can't remember much about now.
Yeah. There's something about it that doesn't have the sticking power, but I can't figure out what it is. I liked it fine. I gave it 4 stars.
I think I even gave it 5.
Wow.
But I really like the writing and how it kind of delves into different perspectives. And I thought each one was kind of well done.
Yeah, it's like different generations. And
yes.
Yeah, she's such a good writer.
That's the only one I've ever read by her. So I need to get going on that backlist.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. Well, I read a lot from the long list. I mean, even after the shortlist got announced, I had read quite a few of those, like before even the long list was announced, just because they were in the news a lot and popular. And I wasn't as excited with some of the like remaining short lists. So I was just like, I'm going to read the long list instead.
That's kind of fun. So what were your favorites?
Well, I think I actually have marked 4 that I read from the long list as 5 stars. So one of them was part of my Asian reading year last year, Bangkok Wakes to Rain by Pittahaya Sundabandhad, which I think is an amazing modern Thailand novel, which is not getting quite enough attention, in my opinion. I was hoping it would make the shortlist so it would get a little more readership, but I really like that one. And then one I just actually read this weekend, Girl Returned by Donatella Di Pietranovio, I think is what it is.
That was a valiant effort.
Yeah, I can't read my own writing. But it's so good. It was short. It's translated from the Italian. It's about this girl who's returned to her birth family when she's 13 and she doesn't understand why. And her birth family is poor.
And she was taken in by wealthier people before?
Well, like relatives of those people. Oh. And they don't explain it to her and they just return her. And she has to navigate like this giant family and not having money. And, you know, right when you're 13, which is a hard year for most women, I think. It was such a good read. And it was like the perfect length. It didn't drag on longer than it needed to. And I just thought it was excellent. And it's interesting because it's translated by the same woman who translates Elena Ferrante.
Oh.
And so it kind of scratches that itch a little bit. And I'd heard that, but I never believed that kind of thing when people say it. But I think in this case, I actually agreed.
That idea of tracking translators is interesting to me.
Yeah.
But that Girl Return sounds like exactly up my alley. I need to put it on my list.
It's so good. And then I had read Sabrina and Karina by Kali Fajardo-Einstein, which is a book of short stories set in the indigenous and Hispanic kind of suburbs of Denver. So it's kind of specific location-wise, but it's trying to kind of bring attention to, you know, this pretty significant population that's around that area that's been there forever. There's such strong voice in the stories and the characters are all really memorable. And I read it right as the American Dirt controversy was hitting about that week. And I found this book and I didn't even realize that it would kind of connect. But this is, you know, actual own voices author talking about an area where she grew up. And even though it's fiction, it just felt super authentic and real. And I really enjoyed it. And it's short stories. And I'm not usually like 5-star short stories. So
Sabrina and Corina was a finalist for the National Book Award.
Well, and the cover is beautiful, which helps.
It is.
So the other book on the long list that I gave 5 stars to is Olive Again by Elizabeth Strout. I thought it was even better than the original Olive Kittredge. And I've talked about it on the podcast already, but it was so good. I want everyone to go read both of those books.
Those are both on my list. I loved My Name is Lucy Barton by her, but that I think is the only one I've read by her. So I need to read both of the Olive books.
Yes. And there's so many from the long list that I'm looking at now that I didn't even touch. So there could be so many more 5-star reads. Like I was hoping to get to the Marcy Dermansky. What other ones were really calling my name? Well, I'm almost done with Patsy by Nicole Dennis Benn because I loved her debut novel so much. And I kind of was interested in, well, not kind of, super interested in Dux Newburyport, but.
I am putting in my vote now on the record for that to be the next read along.
I think it's going to be, or maybe I'll have to do 3 this year because I don't want to do it alone.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of book that would be fun to, my problem with read alongs is I tend to read ahead and then I kind of lose the stream. That one, I think I could stick with a schedule.
Yeah. I've been watching someone on Instagram read this one and it's clear that she'll just like block out time and just churn through it. It's pretty impressive.
It sounds kind of fun if you had like a community to do it with.
Yeah. So. Well, I have notated your vote.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Are there any
books on the long but not short list that you really still want to read? Like you're...
You know, I tend to move on.
Yeah.
I think I kind of burned myself out reading most of the short list, but I do have Olive Again and Olive Kitteridge on my list.
Yeah.
A Woman Is No Man is definitely on my list. That was one of my Book of the Month picks last year that I didn't read. It's in my stack of shame. So,
I still have books from the first year I was in Book of the Month.
Oh, me too. It's not horrible. I think I'm under 10, but still. Wow.
So people can keep going back to this list and...
It is a good resource.
Okay, so the shortlist is kind of confusing because there's the shortlist, but then there's three books that are in something called the play-in round. And so basically only one of those three makes it into the 16. Which one do you think it'll be?
So the three play-in books are Golden State by Ben Winters, Oval by Elvia Wilk, and We Cast a Shadow by Maurice Carlos Ruffin. The only one I read was Golden State, and I liked it. Didn't love it. So that would have to be my vote.
I think we both bailed on Oval, right?
Yes. I didn't even attempt We Cast a Shadow. Did you DNF it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I only gave it 50 pages, but I'm in this group in Goodreads called Newest Literary Fiction, and they had read it as a group read, which I didn't participate in. And a lot of them were over the moon about it. So I thought, well, I should at least give it a try, but it's satire and it's about race. But to prove you know how satire always has a point?
Right.
In the beginning, at least, to prove that point, it was putting people of color through incredible torture, only in like a different way. And I was just like, I mean, I get it, but...
I don't want to read it.
I don't want to read it. I don't. But I think that's going to be the one that wins.
I was intrigued by the premise of it. It's basically like a futuristic world where race still plays a part, right?
Yeah. And this guy is like working his life to the bone to try to afford the surgery that will modify his son to look less black.
Right. To be white. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Yep. but and I, Golden State, I thought the voice of the main character, Laszlo, is that his name? Yes. I thought it was really well done. It just kind of lost me plot-wise towards the end.
Yeah, it's really funny because I compared it to... Well, I just think he's like Philip K. Dick, basically, if you've ever read him.
Oh, I saw your review. Yes.
Yeah.
Of our generation.
Yeah, the more I say it, the more I think it's right. Because the thing about Philip K. Dick is his ideas are always great. And his characters are people that you root for, like even when like they're making stupid decisions. But then the plots of the novels always kind of fall apart a little bit.
Yeah, and that sounds about right.
Yeah. And so then if someone like makes a movie about it or something, it's like a brilliant movie because they fix the problems that were in the book. It's kind of unfair because I have liked other novels by him, maybe more than I liked this one. I read Underground Airlines, which came out the same year as Underground Railroad and got very little attention. But
yes. Did you like it?
Yeah, I liked that one. And it described a place I lived in Indiana like exactly. It was really uncanny. Oh. And I've read the first book of his Lost Policeman trilogy, which is kind of a similar character, but it's like basically the world is ending. But there's this cop who's going to keep doing his job.
Well, yeah, that does sound kind of like Laszlo. Like,
yeah.
I'm dedicated to this job. I'm going to do it. But yeah, so I don't know. I typically don't pay too much attention to the play-in, honestly. So we'll see.
We'll see. It'll
probably be next week, I think. By my calculations, it should be sometime next week. So,
and that one goes by vote, right? Not judge.
No, it is a judge.
It is a judge. So they have to read three.
Yes. Those poor kids.
So I think you did a pretty good job reading the shortlist, a little better job than I did, but you said there's just one you didn't finish. Is that?
I have not finished The Testaments by Margaret Atwood yet.
I'm really curious to see how that one will do.
Me too. It was the very first one I bought on the list, and I just have not been able to make myself read it, partly because of the Booker stuff we alluded to earlier. She shared the prize with Bernadine Evaristo, right? I don't know. But yes, I read all of the other 14 that have made the shortlist.
Well, I think that's pretty impressive.
It's the first year I've ever done it, so I feel pretty good about it.
That's like definitely a gold medal kind of moment.
Yeah, my little gold star is in the mail, I'm sure. Yeah.
What is your least favorite of the ones you've read?
My least favorite, by pretty good margin, was Overthrow by Caleb Crane.
Okay. Yeah, that's one I haven't read yet.
It has not, at least in my little corner of the book internet, has not been getting a lot of love. It's about this group of, I don't know if they're hipsters technically, but they're like mid-20s sort of shiftless characters that kind of hang around and have random jobs. And then one of them decides that he has ESP and can perceive the feelings of others. So they don't read minds, but they can read your feelings. And it's kind of wrapped up with the Wall Street Occupy movement.
Oh,
and
it's okay.
Just kind of random and weird. And it just didn't work for me. So that was my least favorite. What about you?
Well, I have a few that I gave 3 stars to, and one of them I think is going to do very well in the tournament because I think it has aged better than it started, if that makes sense. So I gave 3 stars. I guess the things I DNF'd are probably rated lower than my 3 stars, but I feel weird talking about them because I didn't even bother finishing them. But so I'll start first with my 3 stars and then I'll go back.
Okay.
So Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson. I just thought, it's fine. The Testaments by Margaret Atwood, because it made me mad. I'm surprised I didn't get it too. I've probably said enough about that on this podcast. And then Trust Exercise by Susan Choi, I gave 3 stars to. And I feel like lately I've been reading tons of positive reviews because it does kind of hook into the Me Too movement. It does kind of ask questions about whose story can you trust and is there really one narrative? But I really feel still, even though it won the National Book Award, I still feel that novel suffered from a similar issue with the Ben Winters, where it starts out strong. The idea that she had is good, but I felt like in the end, she should have done more with that idea for it to really pull off, in my opinion.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I thought I was even into it through this. So for people who haven't read it, it's basically told in 3 sections that kind of shift. And so the first section, I was like, okay, we're doing this. The second section, when it shifted, I was like, okay, I'm with you. But then the second section ended with sort of a Chekhov's gun thing that I felt was very obvious.
Yeah.
And then the third part was so short, it didn't do anything for me.
Right. And I was reading this Twitter exchange today about someone who basically just finished it. And they're like, who's read this? I need to talk about this. And so there's this long thread of replies, which was great. The people that really love it seem to agree that the whole point is that you're left going, wait, what? And I'm like, is that really the goal?
Right. Is that what we're going for with a good book? I don't like that feeling very much.
I don't either. It makes me feel like I'm stupid, which is the same reason I don't like satire most of the time.
That's a good point. Like, yeah, I'm a pretty big reader. I think I'm fairly smart. And if I don't get a book by the end, I'm like, did I miss something? Yeah. Anyway.
Like, I started out thinking it was a novel about theater kids. I was super into that idea.
Yeah. And the whole idea of a trust exercise taken to kind of an extreme in the book was interesting.
Yeah.
But then she doesn't really ever come back to that idea.
Unless that's the point.
Yeah, I know.
You trust the novelist to do a certain thing, and she's like, I'm not going to do it.
I did see that. And I thought maybe, like I said, the Chekhov's gun thing in the second part, like she may just be doing that on purpose, saying, here I am doing this thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like you said, I think if she had some good ideas, but they didn't quite come together.
And I'm sorry, I don't award bad behavior like that.
I gave that one 3 stars too. I actually gave 3 stars to all 3 of those you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Nothing to See Here, Trust Exercise. And then what was the third one?
The Testaments.
The Testaments. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I have a few that I just didn't finish. We already talked about Oval because it was a play-in round. But the other two that I didn't finish, I'm actually really frustrated about them. because I did give both of them more than one chance. Oh. And one of those is The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates. And I was so excited for this novel. And I'm a huge fan of him as a nonfiction writer. I'm a huge fan of him as an essayist, as a speaker. I think he pulls no punches. He doesn't try to be who you want him to be. He's who he feels like being. And, you know, he's a MacArthur genius fellow. And I think he used that time and money and space to say, well, maybe I can write fiction. And that's a great use of that time and money, I think. I don't know what it was about the way it was written. His nonfiction is so straightforward and direct. And it was like, this was the opposite of that. I just couldn't get into it.
That's interesting. I totally understand what you're saying. I am a huge Ta-Nehisi Coates fan too. I've read most of his nonfiction, and I was also highly anticipating this book. I ended up giving it 4 stars, but that first chapter in particular, I still have no idea what happened. But I did find it to be, so there's an element of magical realism in it, right? They call it conduction, where certain people, including Harriet Tubman and our main character, have this potential power to conduct humans, which is a useful skill in the time of slavery, working for the underground, right? But I found that use of magical realism was completely unnecessary and detracted more than anything. And I found it most interesting when it was more concrete, when it was more Ta-Nehisi Coates as a fictional person observing slavery and commenting on it in a personal way.
I felt similar ways with, I just blanked on the title, but can you think of the novel about the Doors? The Black Doors.
Oh, Exit West.
Yes, thank you. The Moshe and Hamid book.
Yes.
To me, the magical realism in that one had the same effect of like deflating the whole point. And I also think that was true with Underground Railroad for me. I don't know. I feel like you just don't need it. Like, trust what you're writing. It's fine.
I agree. I think giving Harriet Tubman magical powers lessens what she actually did. She did those things without magic. She did them at risk of her life constantly. And so did so many other people who worked for the underground. And so saying that they did it by use of some sort of magic, I thought harmed it more than anything.
Yeah. That would have been nice if they'd had access to that, but they didn't. And look what they did. Yeah. It just didn't hit right for me, I guess. I wanted it to.
Yeah.
And then my other one that I quit twice is Fleshman Is in Trouble. And I'm super disappointed because like I read these compelling reviews that say, you know, something happens in the end that makes sense of everything and it's worth every minute. And I'd read like the first 50 to 70 pages and put it aside. And then I read that review and I went back and I did something I never did and I never do. And I read the end.
I never do that either.
And I thought, okay, well, this is interesting. Can I get there? I couldn't get there.
So you read it from the perspective shift at the end? Is that what you did?
Yeah. Cause I just wanted to, cause the person that wrote the review didn't give it away. They just said, there's this important information at the end. And you know, I guess even knowing that can be a spoiler, I guess, but.
Right.
And partly for this one was format because I had the ebook from the library checked out. And so I kept hitting the expiration wall.
Oh, that's so annoying. I hate that.
Yeah.
I ended up really loving this one. I gave it 5 stars.
Wow. Okay.
And I don't know. So I listened to it in audio, which can really change the experience, right?
Yes.
But it also just sort of nailed, I don't know, I'm getting to be middle-aged. I've been married for 17 years. I've got a kid about the age of the kids in the book. And it just sort of
felt relatable.
Yeah, it hit that sort of where you're at in your career and where you're at with your family and struggling with like day-to-day things that seem stupid, but don't feel stupid, you know?
Yeah.
And I ended up liking, though not loving, the perspective shift. I don't know. Sorry. That's probably partly a spoiler too, but it spoke to me on some level of, it also One of the things I sort of was looking for as I read the whole list, short list, was themes. And I think one of the themes is sexism, or how we treat men versus how we treat women, and how people are starting to treat that in literature. And this, I thought, was an interesting example of that, because almost everything's from the husband's perspective.
And right. Until it's not, right.
Until it's not, yeah. And then it just makes you see that not everything is black and white, and not everything is as it, like we were talking about with trust exercise, there's not always just one narrative, right?
Right. And not everyone really needs that walker either.
Right. But but I also see how it is definitely not for everyone. And I even think if I had read it, even this month, my perspective on it might have been different.
I think that's why I was so frustrated, because it, like what you're saying about it, makes me wish I'd finished it, because I love marriage novels. I love failing marriage novels. It's usually my thing, but yeah. I just wasn't patient enough in the right moment when I had access to the book. That's maybe I should try it in audio. I still feel like maybe I'll give it a third try.
Well, there's an interesting narrative structure, right? It's not told by the husband or the wife. It's told by their friend. And that comes through, I think, in the narration, because it's from his perspective, but it's a woman narrating it.
Yeah.
And so I think that adds a level to it that I don't think I would have gotten in print.
Yeah, but probably.
Anyway.
Well, how about you? Like, what else do you have on your lowest rated list?
Let's see. So we did talk about briefly Nothing to See Here. I thought was just eh.
Yeah.
Eh. I didn't find the main character's motivations to be very believable.
No.
So, and this is one where we sort of disagreed. I gave 3 stars to Optic Nerve by Maria Ganza. Gainza? Is that what we decided?
The YouTube video said Gainza.
Gainza. That's right. Optic Nerve by Maria Gainza. So I gave it 3, and it looks like you give it 5.
I gave it 5. Yes. I think this book is the most surprising book for me from the list. So tell me what you didn't like about it.
So again, this was, my local library is really small, so they do not have a large selection, especially of new books, but they do get digital audiobooks more often for some reason. So this is another one I had on audio.
Oh, I can't picture it in audio.
No, actually, it was a fail in audio, because it's short, almost stories, short stories of centering around the narrator's life, but then that deal heavily with artists, right? And on audio, I couldn't pull over the car and look up the painting she was talking about. So it failed for me. And I felt frustrated, because I don't feel like books should have to rely that heavily on me doing a bunch of research. But I could also see that the language and the way she relates to the author's lives was really cool.
I'm just looking to see if it's translated or not. It is. So I think this is one of those instances where this book wasn't written for us.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. She's Argentinian, right?
Right. And it's originally written in Spanish. And I suspect, although I could be wrong, that the artists that she talks about are more known to the people who may have been first readers of her book. So they may have these things in their heads, like we would have water lilies or girl with a pearl earring or whatever.
Right.
And so like, if you had it already in your head and you didn't have to make that leap, it probably would have been more relatable, I'm guessing. I did do exactly what you're saying. I stopped. I looked up the paintings. I read about the artists, because I didn't know any of them. And I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much if I hadn't done that. And it kind of forced me to slow down too, which I liked. Sometimes I need to slow down a little bit. But to me, I think more of it was like, she's talking about art, but she's also talking about herself through the art. I just loved that. It felt more like memoir or essay, although it's fiction. But it's kind of
auto fiction.
Yeah. Yeah. It made me think of like Deborah Levy or Rachel Cusk, kind of that style, because it's kind of sparse in its writing. So actually, like, this is kind of my dark horse book, I think.
I like that. I thought her writing was well, like the turns of phrases, and maybe that's more to the, it's hard to tell the translator.
Yeah, is it the translator?
Yes, but I thought it was well done. And I only knew one of the painters. I knew Mark Rothko, and that was it. So,
oh yeah, Rothko. I guess I do know Rothko.
Right. But other than that, yeah, it was, but I think that's a valid way to look at that, is that this is not for me. It's not for us, right? It's like, not like we should not be reading it, but it wasn't trying to address itself to us.
Right. But I guess that brings up maybe another theme that I kind of see in the tournament. And that is that some of these are actually really asking a lot of the reader.
Yeah.
Whether it's a different perspective or a novel that goes in a direction you're not thinking it should, or suspension of disbelief, or some time spent in research. Even Lost Children Archive, which we both loved, it's kind of told in an unusual way. And it might depend on how much familiarity you have with these archival boxes and that kind of thing too.
That's true. So
I do kind of like that. Experimental fiction, I'm not sure I'd call all of this experimental, but there's this line that I get to and I never know that I'm there until I've crossed it and then I'm frustrated. But, you know, we say in the classroom, like, that's where learning happens.
No, I completely agree. And that's partly why I'm such a fan of the tournament, is because it does force me to do that. There are a lot of these books I would never have read.
Oh, totally.
The tournament. Oh, and then the only other 3-star one I had on the list was All This Could Be Yours by Jamie Attenberg.
Yeah. And I gave that 4, but, you know, 3.5, really.
Yeah, and, you know, I've read a couple others of hers. I read the Middlesteins, however you want to say that. And I just feel like she's really good at character, kind of like we were talking about with Ben Winters, or not Ben Winters, the opposite. She's good at characters. She's not great at plot for me. And so I just felt like while I was interested in the characters, I wasn't sure where we were going.
Right. And she uses the plot just as a way to have a timeline to explore the characters, really.
Yes. And that, yeah. And sometimes I'm in the mood for that, honestly. Uh-huh. Sometimes I'm there for it. But this just didn't get there for me.
Well, and the weird thing for me is I was reading this in the airport and on the airplane on the way to say goodbye to a father figure, my father-in-law, which was, I didn't know what this book was about. I just started it because I knew it was on the tournament. It was more connected than I expected it to be, although I would not call my father-in-law a tyrant, luckily. Just all the weird ways people behave around death and dying, and how everyone's so much more themselves in bad ways. And I thought she really captured that. But you know who it reminded me of? Did you ever read the Bill Clegg book, Did You Ever Have a Family?
No, it was on the long list 1 year and I downloaded it and never read it.
That's an interesting one because I had to start that one twice, but in the end, I ended up really loving it. And he kind of does this thing where there's this event that happened and you see it through the eyes of everyone who's a secondary character only, because your narrator, cool. primary narrator, can't be trusted because she's gone through this incredible trauma and it's related to the event. But you learn about the plot through the character's eyes. You have to be pretty good at putting all the pieces together to make it work.
Yeah, that's talent. If you can land, stick that landing.
Right. And I do think that Jamie succeeds in that. It's just nothing happens. It's not an anything happens novel.
No. And I did like looking at the parents' marriage from the eyes of both the children, the grown children, and eventually the wife was really an interesting dynamic for me. And again, the way women are treated kind of comes through in this novel too. So I did like that. But by the end, I was just like, okay, thank you for that.
Why did I have to spend time with this family? Yeah.
Yeah. So I probably will continue reading her because I think she's interesting and her books are relatively short. I haven't been blown away by
it. I read the last one, but I can't remember the name of it. It had a girl on the cover.
I think I read it too. All grown up.
So you said that was your last 3-star one. Did you have 4-star books on here?
2. I had The Water Dancer, which we already talked about. And then, okay, you're going to have to say the word for me because you gave it 4 stars too. And
it's Saudade.
Thank you. Saudade.
But it looks like Saudade.
Yes, which is how I was saying it in my head, which is dangerous. But
this is the other translated book, right? Is this one translated?
I think so. No, she's Australian.
Oh, I keep forgetting
that. I forget that too. So she's Australian. It's not translated, but it is about kind of based on her family history, I think.
Yes, in Angola.
Yes, Angola, which is a country I have not thought about much, but I really loved getting to know it in this book. And so it kind of takes place before and then during a period of civil unrest, right?
Yeah, where basically the colonizers are moving out.
Which is nice, but scary.
Yeah. And then her family belonged to the kind of the middle class that was also brought in because they are from Goa, India. So
you have this double immigration type factor.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're part of the empire, but they're not the ruling class. They're the people that come in and like open up shops and further suppress the people who were there first.
Yeah. I thought it was really well done. It's so short. It felt almost insubstantial in some ways, but some of the language was really beautiful.
Well, and I like the whole concept of Saudaje is about not belonging anywhere. And I think that's the idea she's exploring, which I thought she did very well, because obviously she's from this Goan family, but she's never been to India. She was born in Africa, but in Africa, it's made clear to her that's not where she belongs. So like, right. What do you do?
I think it's happening more and more in our world, right? People are being displaced, and how do you adjust to that? How do you move forward?
So I thought it was a nice exploration of that term.
Yes, me too. I liked her. What did she say? She defines it a lostness, a feeling of not having a place in the world. I liked it quite a bit. And it was one of those in the category of I never would have heard of it if not for the tournament.
No, I think it was a small press book too, wasn't it?
Yeah, when I went to find it, it's now been released by a bigger press.
Oh, okay.
At least there's two versions of it on Amazon. Huh. One from the original press, or maybe it's not even a bigger press. It's an Australian press and then an American press.
Gotcha. This Australian made it on, so Heather Rose could have.
Yeah.
Interesting.
They do. One of my favorite books was Australian a couple years ago on the list. I do like having, I can't remember what the name of it was, but maybe it'll come to me as we go on.
Yeah.
So did you have other 4-star books?
I think we've talked about them all already. All This Could Be Yours, Golden State, and Saudaje.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that leaves the 5-star books.
Yes.
I mentioned this before, but I almost never have 5-star books on the Tournament of Books shortlist.
Yeah, I was surprised how many I had.
Ton. It's nice. It's the way we prefer it to be, right?
But yeah.
All right, where do you want to start? We already talked about, I had Fleischman is in Trouble.
Right.
It's a 5-star book I've already talked about.
And then we talked about Optic Nerve, which I had as 5 stars.
Oh, that's right.
Girl, Woman, Other, is that one of yours?
Yes.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Loved it. So many voices, so many connections.
So it's basically takes place in the UK and it follows, I don't even know how many women.
11, 14, it was quite a few.
Quite a few. And normally that kind of thing kind of bugs me because I'll either be so invested in a character, I'm mad when we leave, or I get to a character and I'm bored.
Right.
And that did not happen to me with this one. I just sort of went with it. Like, oh, we're going over here. I'm going to talk about this lady. Okay. We're going to talk about these two over here. Okay. And it worked for me completely.
And all of them, I think, are women of color.
There's her friend from school that I think is white. That's a teacher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the only one I can remember, but yes, I think, and quite a few of them are homosexual or trans.
There's one person. Trans character, I believe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I loved that there's kind of this full spectrum of people and experiences. My favorite one was about an abusive relationship between two women that I thought was just really well done and not something I get to read about.
And I think it kind of connects to a nonfiction book that I read that was so good, In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado, which is exactly what that's about.
Interesting. I'll have to look into that.
Oh, it's so good. She's such a good writer. But that little chapter reminded me of that.
And so I have not finished The Testaments, but I wish she had gotten the Booker by herself.
I thought her book was good enough to have been given that award. Yes. Yeah. You know, and for it to stand on its own. But I hope more people read it because of that, because it's excellent.
Exactly. That's it. You know, even being on the shortlist for the Booker, I'm glad more people found it than.
Yeah. Well, and I kind of expected, honestly, there's always these London-based authors that write novels that I find I can't connect with the characters for some reason. I don't know. Like, it seems like every year on the Booker list that there's something like that. But this one, I kind of read last just to kind of give it a chance, and then ended up loving it so much more than I expected. It was a nice surprise.
Yeah, I don't think I knew anything about it going in, and it was just a lovely experience.
I remember finishing it the night before the Booker Prize was announced, because I was like, I still have time. I can fit it in.
Yes. And then you were sort of rewarded.
Yeah. Well, it was a pleasant surprise. I like that when that happens. Same with, I would say, Lost Children Archive, which I'm sure we can talk about some more. I almost never picked this one up because I'd had mixed experiences with the author previously. I did not like the story of my teeth.
Me either.
And I don't even know if I read her book about refugees, which was nonfiction, like a quick read. And I'm sure there's something in between there, but the teeth one kind of ruined it for me for a while.
Yeah, I only read that one because it was in the 2016 tournament. Uh-huh. And I just did not know what that was about.
No.
So yes, I was nervous about this one, but I read this one well before the shortlist came out, and I can't even remember why. It might have even been you.
Oh, I was trying to get everyone I knew to read it, so I'd not be surprised.
Oh no, I actually remember. It was because it was the Camp Tournament of Books winner.
Oh,
that's why I read it.
Okay, well, I was not really even thinking about Camp Tournament of Books, but that's probably why I read it too. I didn't realize that we had some books left over from that on this list.
Yeah, so just it won. So it got, yeah. I think Trust Exercise, I believe, was also part of the camp.
But was this the first camp year?
I think it was the third.
I'm just out of touch.
Well, it just goes, the years go too fast.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. Let me see. Nope. They started it in 2018. So this is only, so for the 2018, they did it in 2017. Yeah. So this would be the third year, I guess. Huh. So Fever Dream won the camp the first year and ended up winning the tournament.
Yeah. Amazing.
And then last year, Census by Jesse Ball won the camp and didn't do well in the tournament. So
I never read that one.
I kind of liked it. It was weird though.
I've had mixed experiences with that author. I've never finished a book by him. So I just was like, eh.
He's been in the tournament a couple times and I have never loved anything, but I did like Census. But anyway, I think it'll be interesting to see if Lost Children Archive can follow in the footsteps of some, you know, maybe win the thing. I don't know.
I'm rooting for it. I really am. And so many people that I've made read this book have really loved it too. So I feel like we're not alone.
Right. But it is its first round in the tournament. It's against Mary Toft, which has
become kind of a dark horse. I didn't read that one, but people seem really into it.
I loved it.
Is that another five-star one?
Yep.
Oh, it man.
Is. So Dexter Palmer is the author, and he had another book in the tournament a few years ago.
Version Control,
which I did not read. Did you read that one?
I either bailed on it or hated it. Let me look.
Okay. I'd be interested to know because it seemed, I didn't read it because it just sounded weird.
Well, I have this issue with literary writers doing science fiction as if their idea has never been explored. It's like one of my biggest pet peeves. And so I might have let him have it, but it might be a different book that I'm thinking of. So let me just look really quick. I said, I stalled at page 267 and then I didn't even think I wanted to renew it. There's just not enough going on.
That's
not the one. Yeah, I was giving it a pretty good try. I think it's that Dark Matter book. Do you know that one?
Oh, that's Blake Crouch.
That's the one that I got really mad about.
Because he was the very first one to ever explore alternate reality.
And he missed this really huge opportunity that would have made it an awesome novel. And he just didn't follow up with something that was so obvious to me. Because I read a lot of science fiction.
The Tournament of Books crowd is not a huge science fiction crowd. So you get kind of a skewed... Yeah.
Which is funny because when I made my Philip K. Dick comparison of Ben Winters, I think most people have no idea what I was talking about.
I have never read any Philip K. Dick. I do have some compendium around here somewhere that is waiting for me someday.
Hmm. Tell me why people like Mary Toft so much, because it sounds kind of gross.
It's gross and it's weird and it's perfect. It's historical fiction, essentially. It's based on a true event in the 18th century England. A woman was birthing rabbits. That really happened. And so they call her doctor and they're like, this is weird. And so she had a miscarriage. And then she starts birthing rabbits and the doctors get involved. And so this story is told mainly from the perspectives of the doctors who come. So there's initially the local doctor, right, who's a surgeon who has an apprentice and they're trying to deal with it and trying to figure it out. And then eventually more and more famous doctors come and start intruding into this situation. And it becomes this, I don't know, there's this interesting thing. Let me read a quote from it that'll kind of give you a taste for it. It says, this is sort of towards the middle. Somehow the matter of her health had become less relevant with each passing day. The last and really the only attempt made at curing her had been the phlebotomy, which had accomplished nothing. Since then, all involved had decided to watch and discuss as if mere observation and conversation were enough. It occurred to him that, though they would never admit it to themselves, those in the crowd around him might desire the woman's illness, want it to be prolonged, want its renown to grow. So those now in the middle of the small process might find themselves near the head of a larger one. And that process, rather than serving the woman or the god whose name it so easily invoked, might serve in the end only itself. So it's this interesting exploration of both 18th century England and medicine and that kind of thing.
Like philosophy almost, it sounds
almost.
Like.
Almost. Well, except it doesn't really go too much that way. This is more plot driven than that, but yes. And then there is one chapter, which is my very favorite, from Mary's perspective. It's just beautiful and talks about how the woman in the story, the woman at the center of the story, the woman who set this whole thing off is completely ignored. Her feelings, her pain, her situation. She's just a cog in
women's
the wheel.
Pain. There yes. you go. It's like what you were saying.
Yep. And she's just a player in all these important men doing their thing. And so anyway, I was surprised. I'm still surprised how much I liked it. Anyway.
That, is it a long book?
It is 336 pages long.
Okay.
So not horrible. I would recommend it. And I have heard a lot of people enjoying it, which surprises me too.
I have too. It's just historical fiction is not often my thing. And I don't know. I probably will end up just giving in and trying it because I don't want to miss out.
Yeah. Well, it'll be, like I said, it's pitted against Lost Children Archive right out the gate. And if it loses, it's done. Right, yeah. Because it's not going to have enough zombie votes.
No, probably not.
So
it almost feels like the zombie vote happened and then people started reading and talking about this book.
Yep.
Like
yep.
It seems and very recent that people are talking about it.
I think that's right. I can't remember when I read it. I got it for Christmas. It was one of the editions that I added right for.
Wow.
So I haven't read it. It wasn't very long ago I read it. So
yeah.
What other 5-star ones are up there?
Well, Normal People.
Oh,
which I loved when so I read it, good. But it's been so long since I've read it that I feel like I need to reread. I've heard it's really good in audio, and I might just try it that way.
That would be, I think, especially if they had two narrators, because doesn't that shift between?
I think so. I think that's what I remember, because there's just basically two main characters, and it's all about this relationship that they have that changes a lot, and the end, you know.
Connell. Yeah.
It's hard to explain to people why it's good.
So I read this one back in April when it came out, and then I read Conversations with Friends, which is her first novel.
Did you like
that
one? Because I haven't tried that one.
I did really like it. And it's got similar problems. The characters are not all that likable. The situations are not all that unique. I don't know how to explain it, but
it's like she's just capturing truth or something.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You just feel like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not very helpful, is it?
I feel the way about this book that I feel about, I don't know if you've ever seen these movies, and I use this as an example way too often. I've probably already said it, but the Before Sunset, Before Midnight with Ethan Hawke and Julie Dempsey. Have you ever seen these movies?
I have not seen them.
They're amazing. They're about this couple that meet on a train in Europe, and they get off the train together and talk all night and walk around, and then they don't see each other again for 9 years.
Oh, wow.
And that's what the next movie is. It's 9 years later, and it's actually in real time 9 years later. And then 9 years later, there's one, and they're like together as a couple. But what is so amazing about those movies is that it just captures how people interact, normal people, in normal relationships with all those little things that like, it's like something stupid you don't have in common, but it's going to tear everything apart, or something silly that was said, but then one person's feelings were hurt, or like just how that kind of thing can derail everything, that ability to communicate that in a way that we all understand it. I think that some people just felt like it was nothing, like it was simplistic, that there was nothing in it. But I feel like the ability to actually communicate that, I feel like it takes some real talent.
I agree. And she's irritatingly young. She's not even 30 yet. And she's got two really well done books out. There's a quote from Connell that he says that I think kind of sums it up. It says, "It's funny the decisions you make because you like someone," he says, "and then your whole life is different. I think we're at that weird age where life can change a lot from small decisions.
Perfect.
Yeah. It just, I think that sort of encapsulates it where it's just like, yes, there are little things that are happening, but they affect so much.
Yeah. It's so good. I just have this feeling that it's going to be out in its first round though, because
who's it against? Let's see. Oh, Fleischman is in trouble.
Oh,
interesting.
It's like the two relationship novels.
Yeah. It sometimes irritates me who they put against people because
I know. For example, how do they pick that?
Right. Trust Exercise is against Overthrow. I don't care. But there are some that I'm like, I'm going to be sad no matter which way this goes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. We've got just a couple.
So did you give Your House Will Pay 5 stars or is that
you know what? I did. No, I did.
I just haven't read that one. I don't know anything about it.
That's one that I finished it and I was like, yes, 5 stars. And then in the week since, I'm like, maybe not 5. I still liked it a lot.
Yeah.
So it's a look at a race motivated shooting, which is kind of a hot topic, right? So I was kind of rolling my eyes at it. A young girl, I think she's 14 or 15, walks into a Korean convenience store and she is kind of sassing the woman who's clerking at the store and she pulls something out of her pocket and it was her money to pay, but the woman thought it was a gun and shot her.
Oh no.
By the time she shot her, the girl had turned around. So she ended up shooting her in the back of the head and killing her. So the book is told from the perspective of the girl's brother and the woman's. So the girl who got shot, her brother, and the woman who shot the girl, her daughter, like 15 years later. So it's not really about the shooting. You know, it's one of those where it's about the shooting, but it's not really about the shooting. It's about how it affected these families.
Yeah, that sounds good.
How it affects their children. Okay. And it takes place in LA and it deals a little bit with the race riots in the 90s and how that kind of, that's when the shooting occurred and how that affected everybody's mindset. And it also touches on how much racism the Koreans were subjected to, which we don't always hear about. And so the Koreans and the blacks were sort of racist against each other sometimes, adding a different level of things. So anyway, I liked it. I'm pretty sure it's a debut. And then for a debut, I think it was pretty well done.
Do you know if the author is male or female? Because I just wrote Steph Cha. Is that right?
Yes. And I'm pretty sure she's female.
Okay.
I don't know how she identifies, but she looks like a female.
I just didn't know if I didn't write down the whole name or if that was right.
Yeah, she goes by Steph Chow. She actually, as I was going through, I'm a spreadsheet nerd. And so I have a pretty intensive Tournament of Books spreadsheet. And she was a judge a couple years ago.
Oh, interesting.
So I like how that kind of comes around. What other 5-star?
The only other one I haven't talked about for mine is On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous.
Oh, that's a 4-star I missed for me. Tell me why you gave it 5.
Well, I'm a huge fan of Ocean and his writing. I've read his poetry first, so I just thought it was beautiful. And just this relationship with the mother, how he's writing her this letter that she'll never read because she doesn't speak English. But his desire to communicate these things to her and for her to understand him, I just thought it just hit me in the right moment, I think. It's been a long time for me, so I'm vaguely bringing it back. I have it on my shelf. I should probably reread it. I just thought it was beautiful. And I had read the poetry so close to it because I'd procrastinated on reading the poetry. And I actually found it easier to read the novel. His poetry is challenging. There's just a great density to it. But I've, at this point, listened to so many interviews with him because I find him very fascinating and how he thinks about his craft. Because I think that when you're an immigrant or the child of immigrants and English is not your first language and English isn't the language that was spoken in your house growing up, I think it changes your perspective on the language and how you employ it, especially if you come at it from a certain angle. Like, he seems so fascinated by how words work that I just feel like you feel every sentence is crafted, but not in an annoying MFA way, but in a really authentic, I care that this is the best way to say this way, you know?
I could definitely see that. You can tell he's a poet.
Yeah.
And it didn't, for the most part, irritate me. Sometimes I felt like he spent too much time deciding the right way to say something.
Yeah.
It works with the frame of the novel, though, because he is writing. a letter to his mother. But sometimes I was just like, okay, I have visceral memories of this book. The monkey scene will never leave my head. And the just the everyday, it's not everyday, but the everyday abuse he suffers, just they're implanted. Those images are implanted in my head, not in a bad way, but in a he made me think about it way.
I would say the book itself, like if you were just looking at it from a form perspective, I do think it's a little bit uneven in what he chooses to have scenes, how spread out they are. But I forgave him that just because I thought that the writing was so beautiful. But I do suspect that not everyone will think of it that way. They'll be more annoyed by maybe some of the downfalls.
Yeah, I wasn't irritated by it. I just didn't, it didn't quite reach 5 stars, but I liked it. And I liked learning about more about what it was like to be Vietnamese during the Vietnam War and how that, again, those repercussions come down, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing, I can't remember if it's like in a foreword to the book or if just in an interview I read, but he thanks Viet Thanh Nguyen, who wrote The Sympathizer, who apparently had an influence on him, whether that was in person or just through his writing. That's cool. An author that I, you know, have great respect for. I've read his fiction and nonfiction as well. And I liked that connection. Like I felt like I understood what he was trying to say. He's told his story very focused on film, cinematic, movie, military stuff. And like, this is my version of the same experience. And they're so different, but they're connected in this really core way that I think if you hadn't read both books, you wouldn't get it. But to me, it made a lot of sense. And I just really liked that too.
And it comes back to the tournament because The Sympathizer was in the tournament in 2016.
Yeah, that's one of the ones I think I had read in advance because I went to see him speak that year. Cool. Or the same year that he won the Pulitzer.
But yeah, it would have been that same year.
Yeah, and he was amazing. Some people just go up front, they read some stuff, answer some questions, and sit down. But he had this whole like hour lecture crafted.
Oh,
you know, where jealous. There's like some lecture, some readings. I mean, you can tell he works as a professor, but it was very impressive.
It's always you never know what you're going to get, what flavor of author. And that's nice when that happens.
The worst part of that reading is the person that stood by his signing table and wouldn't let anyone chit chat with him.
I hate the handlers. Oh. Although I was just at a book signing last week for Catherine Arden. She wrote the Bear and the Nightingale.
Oh, yeah.
Trilogy.
Yeah,
yeah. And her signing line took forever because she chit-chatted with every person, which I think is delightful, except when you're at the back of the signing line.
Yeah.
So there's a balance.
There is a balance. But I think if someone has like stood in line,
I know,
planned ahead, brought their books that they already bought, give them a minute.
Or just to say, hey, hi, I love you. I know. It's always awkward. I never know what to say to them. Because I love you seems a little intimate, but sometimes.
Yeah, I've embarrassed myself so many times that I just think it's just part of the experience and they're probably used to it.
They probably are. And they probably are delighted that we care enough to go see them and love them and read their books. So
I think so. And it's always nice when they're actually nice people. And I felt like the author of The Sympathizer was very nice, but his handler was like controlling the environment.
Well, maybe it was the handler had a date or something.
I've just never had someone act quite like that before. So I was like, whoa.
Oh, I had one. We went to see Marcus Zusek and his handler was like a bodyguard with like the wrist talkie thing and like would come and take people's phones away if they tried to take pictures. I guess they all have their reasons for doing what they do.
Well, I know people that get super famous, they have, if they do readings at all, they have it set up so like you pay for the ticket, you get a copy of the book, 200 copies of the book were signed ahead of time. Yeah, good luck.
That's it.
I think that's Stephen King's model.
Well, it would have to be. Somebody asked me the other day if J.K. Rowling ever did like signings and stuff. I was like, there's no possible way. She'd be like mobbed. I can't imagine.
If she ever has, I wonder.
Right? They were asking me like when like book 3 came out, for example, she had to have done publicity.
I would think she would, but like I don't think the books were on my radar until book 3 or 4. So that would have been right with like when everyone else kind of got on board too. I remember reading about the last time Neil Gaiman did a signing.
Yeah.
And it was like 5 hours of line.
You know, I met Neil Gaiman once on accident. at a movie screening and wow. didn't have anything with me to sign, like not a pen, not a, like I wanted to be like, could you sign my arm, sir? It was a wasted opportunity because yes, I will never get to stand in the 5-hour line probably.
I went to a storytelling event that he was one of the storytellers and did no signings, but I brought my books in case.
Secret. Did you get it? Did
no,
you get in?
Oh, no, sad. He was very adamant. I'm just one of the storytellers, one of the raconteurs. But instead, but I went home and wrote a proposal for a storytelling class, which I've taught a few times. So I was inspired regardless. But
that's a pretty good gift to walk away from.
It was a very inspiring moment, but no book signing.
Rats.
But it was weird. Like, he's like one of those people that doesn't seem real. So
yeah,
being that close to him was a strange experience that I didn't expect to have.
He's like a rock star of the book world. Oh, anyway.
Well, I think we've exhausted the tournament of books list.
I think so. So
but there's so many good books there.
Who would you, if you could crown the winner right now, who would it be?
I still want it to be Lost Children Archive.
I think that's where my vote would go to.
But I have this sneaking suspicion that it's going to be either Fleshman, Mary Toft, or Trust Exercise.
I would be so thrilled if it was Mary Toft. I think Trust Exercise will do well. I don't know. Girl, Woman, Other could go far, depending on what judges it gets.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is very well written and of the time.
Right. But I don't know. The Water Dancer and the Testaments are both seeded as one seeds. But I don't know.
I never even pay attention. I don't even know what that means.
So they basically try and match the basketball thing, right? So the heavy hitters are seated at one, and then the like Sadaje and Optic Nerves and those kind of things are seated as four. So the ones and fours go up against each other first, and the twos and threes.
Gotcha. So I have noticed that with basketball, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I would love Optic Nerve to... Because I even feel like even in the Goodreads group, it's just not getting a lot of attention. But I feel like if a judge is really paying attention to it, it has the potential to do well just because I think it's so unusual. But against the Water Dancer, I don't know.
I know. I just, and that's part of the fun of it, right? Because now we've done the work and now it's out of our hands. We just get to watch. It is more and more like a sports metaphor as we go along. You just have to watch and hope your favorites, or at least one or two of your favorites, survive.
I need a Lost Children Archive jersey.
Yes, that would be amazing. Do you ever fill out the bracket, like a hopeful bracket or a predictive bracket, or do you just follow? You do a predictive bracket?
Okay, so in my group of librarians, everyone else fills out basketball brackets and puts them up on the wall, and I put my book one up on the wall.
Yes, nice. I have never done it, and I'm thinking I might. This week.
Well, and I usually like keep track of what I think. And so I fill it out ahead of time and then I write in like what actually happened because I usually do pretty badly.
Well, I've done it a few years for basketball. And since I know exactly zero, that's usually how it turns out for me. But it's more frustrating when you actually have some expertise in this, right? And you still can't get it. It's just so personal.
Yeah, it's all about the judges. I know some people in the past, like, okay, for instance, Dessa is a judge this year. I don't know what books she reads.
Some people go really deep on this and
they
like
do.
Try
they, like,
and
go
research.
Back and they look. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, but I've never done that.
The first judge for the play-in round, I've read her memoir. Yeah. Okay, so I always ask everyone this, so I'm going to ask you too. Is there anything that you are excited to read next or now that your tournament reading is over?
Oh, I'm still going to try to do the Testaments. We'll see how that goes. And then I just started The Dutch House by Anne Patchett for the Litzy Markup Postal Book Club, which is a fun.
You have a postal book club that still works?
It's better designed because it's a 4-month thing with just four people. So you just rotate the book four times.
I still have books out there somewhere that I don't think I'll ever see again.
Even with the Litzy one, I've done it 5 or 6 times and I have one that's never coming home. I'm pretty sure. It's still fun. I like doing it.
And I did it on a Goodreads that worked, that lasted. I just stopped doing it after a few years, but it...
I didn't know they had it on... Is it like a group?
Well, it's funny because it's part of the group that goes with the podcast Books on the Nightstand, which the podcast doesn't exist anymore, but the Goodreads group still does.
Yeah.
They're like diehard fans, but there's a few postal book groups in there.
it was a good podcast.
Yeah.
And then I'm doing Wolf Hall in a read-along.
Oh, is it your first time?
I have tried before twice.
Yeah.
And have never made it through. So I'm hoping this time will stick.
I've never read that one. I've only read the second one because I feel like I know the Tudor story in and out. I mean, I studied it in college. I've watched the Tudors.
There's many BBC specials about this.
Yeah.
So are you going to read the third one?
I think so, yeah. I don't know if I'll ever go back and read Wolf Hall. I feel like I get it. I enjoyed Bring Up the Bodies. I feel like I read it really fast.
It's just it's just so much, so many people. It's hard to keep track of. But anyway, so what have you got on deck? You've got a lot of projects going on.
I know. I feel like I've bit off more than I can chew because I'm doing the read-along of The Odyssey, and I'm on my fifth Faulkner novel. I'm halfway through, and I'm
amazing. You need 5 gold stars for that.
I swear, though, that, I mean, I'm auditing this class for a reason. I don't think I could ever have got through it on my own. It really helps. And then I'm behind on the Erdrich read-along, so I'm trying to catch up. So I think that's the next thing I'm going to finish is Love Medicine by Louise Erdrich, which I actually am really enjoying. It's just, I can't rush it. Like, it demands to be read at like a slower pace. And so I'm trying.
I've had such mixed results with her. I've read 3, I think.
I think the way this group is doing it, because I'm following a few readers on Instagram who are doing the read-along, and they picked the books that are all connected to each other.
Oh, that's cool.
That's helping a lot. So like you see the same characters come back or you see a different part of their story. And yeah, it makes it less random, I guess.
Yeah, that's fun. I like doing things in a group. So.
Yeah, me too. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for joining me and talking about the Tournament of Books. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. Thank you so much. I'm so excited for the tournament to start.
Me too.
Thanks for listening to the Reading Envy podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Reading Envy, or find a complete listing of our podcast episodes, as well as all of the books discussed on today's episode at readingenvy.com.